and thanks for joining us. And we're getting ready for the holidays here, and we appreciate you taking time out this evening to talk horses with us. So, Karen, our first lineup is on confidence issues, and it is how to help people get over the nervous reactions. And we probably all have gone through that at one point or another with different things that's happened. And if you can maybe discuss that a little bit, just how to help people on that.
Okay. You know, those things happen for a reason. You know, we're creatures designed to survive. So one of the things that I really try to emphasize about developing confidence or overcoming fear, kind of things along that nature in that category, is that I have a very simple formula that knowledge replaces fear and at the same time builds confidence. So in anything that's new, different, sudden, or abrupt, it's kind of the same thing with horses, anything new, different, sudden, or abrupt, there's a natural fear reaction to that. And our tendency is to flee. So women in particular, we have a tendency to first we'll freeze and then we'll flee. So that's the common effect that adrenaline has on our physiology. Women, you can tell this is happening. Everybody recognizes the sound. When we freeze, we make this little sound that goes, we make that little, we catch our breath for a second. And everybody's heard them do that. I've done it myself where I've gone, you know, who did that? It was me. So that's our natural instinct, is to first freeze and then we will flee. So one of the things to do is to do a lot of simulations. Simulations mean that you're going through muscle memory in a non-demanding situation so that when you're in a demanding situation, your muscle memory will take over and you will do the right things just through habit and repetition so that you'll react with, I don't want to say mindfulness, because you actually kind of have a out-of-mind experience right there, but you'll respond appropriately to the situation as it happens. So developing seated balance, having the right kind of feel on your hands, you know, which translates to the reins, doing things prior to a situation where you don't automatically grip below your knees for your balance, you know, those are the kinds of things that when we get into an unexpected situation with a horse that can compound the situation from something where the horse just, you know, jumps slightly and stops to where that horse jumps and feels us tense up and then takes off a full-blown, you know, heading for the barn kind of situation. So oftentimes, a lot of the situations that people have with horses, including myself, I've gone through these experiences myself, those situations that could have been minimized by my increased knowledge and experience and simulations, you know, repeatedly, those kind of things could have been minimized. You can't eliminate the risk with horses, but you can certainly minimize it by doing things, being proactive with your learning and your knowledge and your experience. So when I talk about experience, nobody can experience for you. You know, you can watch all the videos in the planet, you can read all the books, you know, in the library, but nothing replaces going out there and just kind of fumbling through it and doing too much or too little until you find just right. You know, that's the same thing when you're learning anything that requires your physiology, whether it's tennis or knitting or, you know, tying your shoes. I mean, from the most basic maneuvers to the most advanced, it's really trial and error and being comfortable with making those errors so that you can learn from those errors. So when it gets to horses, that's where a lot of times there are other dynamics going on beyond learning tennis or knitting or, you know, these other kind of things, because we're dealing with a living, breathing, thinking creature that's having its own mind processing, you know, what's being asked of them, processing their surroundings. So to me, it's about stepping it down and breaking it down to the basic ingredients to where we're so comfortable with the ingredients that we start getting more confident in, you know, creating something with those ingredients. And that's why a lot of times at clinics, people will say, well, I'm an advanced writer, I'm highly skilled in these kind of things. And I go, man, that's great. But you know what? I'm going to take you through a process that breaks it down and identifies those ingredients just like anybody else in the group. And sometimes people are saying, you know, well, I want to learn fine lead changes, and that's great. I love teaching that. But can you stand on the ground and touch your horse from the side where your leg will be and have your horse trot sideways? Well, I think everybody's, you know, kind of getting the idea of building confidence. You know, it's something that plagues many, many people. You know, I just gave an interview for a woman writing a book about fear. I mean, the entire book is written about fear with horses. And, you know, I've had fear with horses, and I was interviewed for a magazine a couple of years ago, and the person interviewing me asked, they said, you know, I was explaining this very concept for her article, and she said, well, you know, when do you have fear? You know, in presenting or with horses or these kinds of things. And I said, you know what, in the past years, I don't know, 10, it might be 10 years, I can't think of a time when fear kicked in. You know, and she looked at me and almost like, you've got to be lying. You know, that can't be an honest statement. And I said, you know, it's really an honest statement. I can't remember when, but how many people have done the things that I've done to the extent that I've done them, you know, see, that's what she hadn't really, I don't know that she had really talked to somebody or interviewed somebody that had done the things that I've done. You know, I've done things to develop my catting reflexes, like, you know, jumping on trampolines and riding unicycles and, you know, hours on bucking barrels. I mean, hours. I don't mean like I got on it two or three times and, you know, rocked it back and forth. I mean, I have purposefully developed that ability for my body to become familiar with when a horse goes rocking and rolling under me and turning and twisting, that my seat automatically knows what to do without my involvement, because in those situations, you honestly don't have time to do that. So there's things that people can do. Again, being proactive with that knowledge and that experience and setting themselves up for success, that we just don't know that we can do those things. And I've been very fortunate to, you know, put myself under the auspicion of some very top horsemen and top instructors. I give my teachers, you know, all that credit because they knew what they were shaping in me. And I knew that I not only needed it, but I wanted that. I wanted that ability to be able to have a high level of skill, to be able to help horses, and also to be able to help people at whatever stage of experience that they're at to understand how they're coming across to a horse and how they can create these kinds of simulations so that they can develop that feel. You know, one of the things, you know, I've talked about over the years is that I keep learning new things, you know, whether it's with horses or other things. And one of the things I'm learning right now, you know, whether it's, you know, playing guitar or sports, different kinds of things, I put myself into new and strange experiences. I was, when I was there with you, Melinda, I was very fortunate to be able to go into, what did they call the room? the fire room where, you know, we went to the Indianapolis Fire Department and put myself in a training situation under full gear and went into a training room where they lit a controlled fire, a flash chamber is what they call it. And they flashed that fire multiple times. And I wanted that experience because those are new sensations. I've skydived. I've walked on fire. You know, I've done all kinds of, you know, seemingly crazy things because for what I do and what my goals are, I need to expand my emotional fitness as well as my physiology awareness and put ourselves into, you know, strange but safe situations. I wouldn't, you know, go do things with crazy people. I've made that mistake. But I don't put myself in harm's way so much as I put myself into situations and experiences that allows my physiology to experience new things. And to me, that's very important to do and to keep doing throughout my lifetime in order to hold that awareness. The awareness around horses changes as your experiences expand. And everybody's had that experience. If you think about when you first got horses and you didn't know which end, you know, which way the brush went, you know, my husband, bless his heart, you know, when I first met him, he knew zero about horses and he was brushing the hair the wrong way. I mean, and that's where we start. I mean, it's really where we start, and that's where the learning begins, and the learning never ends. So the one thing I can say, again, is knowledge replaces fear. But gaining that knowledge is not just book knowledge or book smart, being able to talk about it. It's just developing the willingness to go out and flub around and make mistakes and know that your horse is going to forgive you. They might roll their eyes at us once in a while and go, oh, she's so cute. She tries so hard. Maybe she'll get it one day, and they patiently wait for our skills of communication to get better and better, you know, which it will if we keep that commitment to knowledge. So that's my best advice. It is honestly the best advice. Now, there's a product that's going to be launched. I'm going to have it at the Hoosier Horse Fair. That is a new product. It's not quite out yet, but it's to develop muscle memory for seated balance. So people say, well, I don't have a bucking girl, and I don't have a unicycle, and you know all these kinds of things. This is a unit that you can put in your living room and, you know, watch your favorite TV show and not feel guilty about it, because you're actually going to be sitting on it and it's going to develop the seated balance. Unlike a ball doesn't do what this does. I haven't found anything on the market that does what this does, and I've researched it. So a sports physiologist has developed it, and I'm hoping to have it. I'm planning on having it at the Hoosier Horse Fair, and people will be able to sit on it, use it, and see what it does. You right when you sit on it, you go, this will help me develop that seated balance. To me, that's the big missing piece in helping people develop their confidence. Because when you don't have seated balance, we have lots of things for standing balance. We walk, you know, just when we're walking, we have standing balance. But that's different than seated balance. So this product has been developed specifically to develop that muscle memory. And when you have that kind of muscle memory, I'll tell you, the last time I was on a bucking girl was at a friend of mine in California, and I mean, he tried to buck me off. He tried, you know, bless his heart. And I was on there, of course, yelling at him, but I'll tell you what, when I got done, I thought, man, I don't know a single horse, I've never seen a horse buck like that, not at the NFR. And it just made me realize that my muscle memory is so strong that even in that experience there, you know, and it's not to say I can't come off a horse. I certainly have and do. That's gravity. That's a law of gravity. Horse can get out from under you. You know, things can happen. Horses fall down. You know, things happen. But we, again, it's about minimizing the risk. So the more we minimize the risk, that equates to confidence building. And I wish I could give people a pill that says, you know, ding, you have confidence. But it just doesn't work that way. I wish it did. I honestly wish it did. So here's my best advice. You know, start at the beginning, break it down, focus on ingredients, do things from the ground to develop your skills on the ground, which when you get up onto the horse's back, the better you have it on the ground, the more confidence you'll take with you up into the saddle. Ride, you know, look at my website and look at the products that I recommend. I have a whole thing written on wearing leather on your leg. I don't get horseback without leather on my leg because it gives me sticky pants without trapping me. I don't like rubber. You know, there's some products out there that are rubber against the saddle. I don't care for that. That's too sticky. If I need to get off, I need to get off. But leather on leather is the ideal tackiness, but without trapping you on it. So it gives you more security. So people say, oh, well, you wear chaps because they look cool. Well, you know, yeah, they look cool too, but it's the leather on the inside of the legs that makes a huge difference. So there's lots of knowledge in the website and the videos and the DVDs and the equipment that are designed for optimal communication, optimal use. You know, commit to that. Make that commitment, even if it's for 3 months or 6 months or a year or 10 years or a lifetime. If you make that commitment to learning and you keep feeding yourself new information and expanding your experiences and expanding your muscle memory, one day you'll just go, wow, you know, I feel confident. You know, and that's not something that happens overnight. It's something that emerges within us through that process, that experience. But don't let things stop you. You know, we let our brains stop us from things. Where we fail to progress is not in our actions, but it's in that story and that voice in our head that all the, you know, we get negative messaging from all kinds of places, from how we grew up or people in our lives or situations or experiences or fears. Action replaces those fears. There's a wonderful book, if you look in my recommended reading, look in that section on my website, recommended reading. There's a wonderful book called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. People misconstrue that book because it sounds like some kind of, you know, John Wayne thing and go, oh, that doesn't sound like me. But if you read the book, it's really about how our brain processes fear, where it is of value to us. You know, fear gives us a survival mechanism of adrenaline and, you know, hypersensitivity in our senses. But it helps us understand fear and then how to move through it. It's not that you conquer it or you squash it or you kill it or anything. It's not that you do that. It's that you understand it and recognize it for what it is and then learn how to process through that. So, I mean, I could go on and on. Like I said, you know, a person is writing a whole book about this. And I was so honored, you know, when she contacted me and she said she had talked to different, you know, professionals in the industry. And she said my name kept coming up. They said, you know what, if you want to talk about this, you know, because that's a very common issue. And horsemanship for women, you know, we talk about this. I don't know that we have more fear than men. I think we have a different way of processing fear because we can grow up fearless, have children, and all of a sudden fear kicks in because our survival instinct extends beyond ourselves now to the ability to care for our family. Then there's another stage of fear when we get to an age where we start losing bone density. And just the thought of crash and burn just, you know, makes us oogie inside. So, you know, we go through stages in our physiology that men don't have those distinct stages. It's not to say that men don't have fear with horses. They do. But it's a different type of fear, and they process it. They have a different way of processing it. So, you know, when we got done with that interview and talking about it, I almost think her brain might have been kind of swirling about it because, you know, it's such a common thing and yet it's such a simple process to go through it. I don't know that something that seems so big and insurmountable can really have, it's almost unbelievable or unlikely that can have a simple process of just chipping away at it. Just keep chipping away at it and don't give up. If you don't give up, you've succeeded already. So hopefully that helps people. I you can kind of hear I'm a little bit on a soapbox about this, but I feel so strongly about it. I feel so strongly about it for people to enjoy horses. I mean, that's what we have them for. But it's about knowing how to get to a point where it's more enjoyment than frustration or fear. How do you tip that scale? And I promise you, if I can do this, if I can develop the ability to do this, you can too. You know, I mean, honestly, if I can do this, anybody can do this. So, you know, I should be an inspiration and being an example, and I'll continue to develop my skills. I'm committed to doing that, you know, for my lifetime. And Melinda, you've known me for a long time. Mark's known me for longer. And, you know, I live that. I live that each and every day to learn new things about myself and horses, whether it's horse-related or learning-related or personal-related, whatever that is. Learn something new every day, and you'll just chip away at that. One day, somebody will be saying, wow, how did you get so confident with horses? And you're going to be trying to tell them the same thing I'm trying to tell you. It's a journey. You know, it's a journey that doesn't have a final destination. Well, I guess it does. I guess when you start throwing dirt on me over the box I'm in, I guess that's it. But actually, it lives beyond that because, you know, the education that I'm, you know, pulling together and presenting in my program will be there for generations to come. And I'm very proud of that, very proud of our work and proud of the people that participate in it and contribute to it. I learn something from, you know, students and horses every single day. And the horses are the greatest teachers. And the horse will tell you when you're making progress. You'll start seeing the difference in your horse. And you'll go, wow, my horse is different. And the horse is going to be thinking, wow, you're different. You know, and you ride off happily in the sunset. You know, that's my goal. That's my goal for people.
So, Karen, would you say also, as you're building and going through the journey of getting the confidence that you need to start by making sure your horse is matched at the level that you're at, that you're not, I mean, because if I would have gotten Latigo when I first got into horses, it would have been big trouble. You know what I mean? I don't know that I would have been able to gain the confidence because there were so many challenges right off the bat.
Well, that's definitely a factor. That's one of the factors. And last month's teleseminar talks about that. You see, so there's lots of factors. There's equipment, there's knowledge, there's, you know, your dance partner, picking the right partner. You know, there's so many things. But all of that boils down to is knowledge. You know, it's all in there. It's all in the website. You know, and I don't know about you. I hate reading websites. I don't know what it is. But I don't know if it's the glare from the screen bothers me. But when you look at my website, I have a virtual tour. You can go through and I talk about these things. Or you listen on the teleseminar and you really examine what's being said. You know, listening to something one time, you know, you don't get that. That just, you know, scratches the surface. That just gives your brain kind of a taste of new information. It's about listening to it, you know, over and over and over. You know, that's why these Christmas songs are so meaningful, because we've listened to them over and over and over, you know, for our whole lives. You know, so they take us back to something that we're familiar with. You know, people know the words. But for as many times as you listen to the same Christmas song, how many times have you listened to last month's teleseminar? You see, we don't, that's why I keep emphasizing the knowledge is there. You know, it's the right horse, it's the right tools, it's the right knowledge. You know, it's finding a coach who resonates with you, you know, and looking beyond that too, not just being hooked into one person. You know, I've had people say, oh, Karen, you're one of, you know, your knowledge, oh, I'll follow you. And I go, please don't follow me. I'm not somebody to be followed. I'm somebody to be, you know, studied from and glean information from and experienced it, you know, but this is just to aid you, you know, to aid others in gaining their own experiences. Your best teacher is the one with the hair all over his body out there, you know, they're ready to teach you. But, you know, that's why I can't emphasize it more. I really can't emphasize it more. And people, I'm so tickled, you know, I was at the Queen Creek Expo here this last month and, you know, asked the audience who has my DVDs, and people raised their hand. I said, who's watched them multiple times? And people would raise their hand, and they looked at me, and I looked at them, and I said, you know what I'm talking about? And they go, yes, I do. Because every time you watch the DVD or every time you watch the television show or every time you listen to a seminar, you hear it a little differently. You know, and that's what learning is. Learning is that depth of knowing. You don't hear the ABCs one time as a little kid and get it. I mean, I guess, you know, some kids do, some savant or something. But most of it is repetition and a depth of learning until it just becomes so automatic, you know. And then some people learn it backwards, you know, just for fun. You know, some people learn it, oh, take out the vowels backwards, you know, just to challenge their brain and keep it fresh. But so many of us, you know, we really don't do it or understand the extent of the learning. And I've coached people where I've, you know, had one-on-one sessions and helping them with a particular problem, and we'll go through it and the horse gets a little bit better. We do it, you know, a handful of times and they go, okay, I got it. Let's do something else. I just look at them and I go, you know, you didn't even learn to brush your teeth that fast, let alone, you know, develop your ability to help a horse through, you know, a pattern of behavior that you don't want towards a pattern of behavior that you do want. So if we can just kind of look at learning that way and keep a fresh view on learning, you know, keep a beginner's, you know, a new and fresh idea and a curiosity, high level of curiosity in learning, you know, that's the number one thing to develop confidence with horses, because the knowledge is there. the knowledge is there. Just get it. Just go, you know, don't let anything stop you. Get that fire in your belly and really learn it. And you'll be glad that you did. It's such an enjoyable process. Learning is very enjoyable. So just go out and have fun with it and be patient with yourself, be patient with your horse, and just keep chipping away at it, and it'll come. It absolutely will come. Anything. You can learn anything. Do anything. You absolutely can.
Okay. So you're ready to go on.
Don't get me started on that one, let me tell you.
There's a lot to it. So we appreciate your input on that, because I think all of us have been in that situation at one time or another. So I think we can all relate to it. So,
sure.
Okay, we'll go on to question two, and it's on saddle fitting. And it says, I see you ride in a Western saddle. I have one too, like yours, with the Theraflex pad. I have a wide horse, and the saddle rolled off sideways when my horse was trying to pass another. I had it on another Tennessee Walker, smaller guy, and it rocked off of him too. It is an extra wide. I bought this size for my Pasofino at a clinic. Is this a mistake?
You know, that's a hard one because, you know, fitting a saddle to a horse is like fitting shoes, you know, to people. And, you know, there are some horses, you know, that are easy to fit. You know, they have kind of that average size, 8.5 medium width shoe, you know, that you can go in and, you know, try on anything and it fits. Most horses are not that ideal shape, you know, it's a real tough one because we oftentimes don't think about that when we're buying a horse. You know, we buy, and believe me, I've done this. I bought a horse with a low withers, wide back. It's commonly called mutton withers. I had trouble finding saddles, you know, from the tack stores that would fit her. I got dry spots on the shoulders. If I kept riding that saddle, that would eventually turn into white spots on the shoulders, which are scars. That's an indication of scar tissue. You can get white spots along the spine. You know, there's so much to saddle fitting that it's really, I'm not the expert in it. I'll tell you that right now. But I will share with you my experiences is I bought the custom saddle. The horse was, you know, measured and shaped and everything, and I waited 18 months, and I spent thousands of dollars for this particular saddle. I mean, it had, you know, everything I thought I needed on it. And when it came in, it fit that horse like a glove. It was beautiful, everything. Well, I don't ride that horse anymore. And I still have that saddle. I still have this beautiful, handmade buckaroo, thousands of dollars. It's a beautiful saddle. And now I go, well, I've got a really nice extra wide saddle that fits, it doesn't fit any of my current horses. So I can pad that. You know, people talk about all kinds of padding and this and, you know, all kinds of things and shims and things. And there's all kinds of things out on the market. So it's not just being a saddle fitting expert. It's being a, you know, pad shaping expert. And this is why every year I go to the Denver market, which is where retailers go to all the manufacturers. And so it's a huge, huge market. It takes, you know, days to get through it. Hundreds and hundreds of manufacturing vendors there, and I look for products out on the market, such as saddle pads, that'll be ideal to help a saddle fit the back of the horse. You know, and I've tried things. I've tried gel pads and air pads and, you know, everything, waffle pads, waffle weave, wedgie pads, I mean, everything you can imagine. And the thing that I've come back to is what I use, you know, in the very beginning when I knew very little about horses, which is my preferred pad is a 5-star wool pad. And it's just a simple wool pad, but it has enough wool in it, it has the density that it displaces the weight more evenly on the horse's back. Now, if you have a wide saddle and that does not fit the horse, all the wool, even a nice wool pad like that, will not adjust for that. And to be honest, it gets to a point where, you know, there's nothing that's going to adjust my foot to be able to comfortably wear my husband's shoes. You know, it just won't do it. unless I just want to throw them on to go out in the mud to feed the horses. You know, we can wear a couple extra pair of socks and get that done. But if you're wanting the horse to be comfortable under our weight of the saddle, and here's the other piece of it to think about, is that the saddle is rigid while the horse's back is dynamic and moving. So there's not many things on the market that, you know, not only have the saddle fit the horse while it's standing still, but when it goes into motion, you know, the horse's back changes so much while in motion and with every single step of each foot of all 4 feet. So I'm actually working on a pad right now that allows for that displacement of pressure to fill in those gaps that with the immediacy of the movement of the horse's back. There are pads. You know, I've had people come along and say, well, what about treeless saddles? You know, and things like that. Well, to me, most treeless saddles, not all, most treeless saddles are a bareback pad with shapes to them. You know, and that's what it is. It's a bareback pad. There's nothing wrong with it, but treat it as a bareback pad. And in my opinion, bareback pads should not be allowed to have stirrups. There is no structure. You know, that's what the structure of the tree does. The tree puts a shape on the back of the horse, on the horse's back, so that when there's a little more weight on one side or the other, the saddle will stay in the middle of the back of the horse. So, you know, I talk to saddle makers and saddle builders, you know, every chance that I get, and I talk to them about these situations that, you know, people have and I've had. And one saddle maker, I said, you know, one of the problems people seem to have is the round-backed horse. How do you get a saddle to sit on a round-backed horse? And honestly, the saddle makers, they just look at me and they shake their head and they go, don't buy that horse. You know, I mean, that's the true answer. But we tend not to look at the back of the horse, you know, when we're buying it and considering those things. So, you know, those are some of the things that, you know, we're faced with horse ownership. So I am working on a product to develop something that will make more saddles fit more horses. I've used a version of this product for a lot of years, and I've tried to find, you know, something better. Like I said, the 5-star pad, you can Google 5-star saddle pads, and there's English, Western, roping, cutting, you know, barrel racing. There's every kind of shape, you know, dressage, everything. And that has your best chance of giving the comfort and the breathability of a natural fiber, you know, which is very important to the back of the horse. But I am developing something, and I will keep searching, you know, for products. I'd love to find a product that's already made, and I can just, you know, tell people about it like I am with 5-star and say, hey, get this. I love it. But the truth is other than 5-star, I haven't found the thing that will make, you know, do what I'm describing, have more saddles fit more horses. So not to say that it'll make every saddle fit every horse. Anybody who says it can do that, I don't know that I believe it. The closest I've seen to that was a woman, and I wish I could remember her name. It must have been 15 years ago, of a woman that did a saddle fitting clinic. And what she did is she took insulation material. She didn't sell a saddle. She didn't sell a pad. She sold knowledge and examples. And she had, I don't know, probably seven horses and riders. She had people ride without a pad, with a pad, and then she shimmed it. And what she did, if you're handy or, you know, you want to go out and try this, she had black dense insulation material for water heaters. And she took that and made shims, long skinny shims, wide shims, fat shims, you know, all kinds of shapes. And what she did is she felt underneath with a saddle on the horse's back without a pad. And then run a ruler or just put your hand under there and see where the gaps are. And then she put those, you know, saw how many shims it would take to shim those gaps, then put the pad on, put those shims in there, and because of that material, they didn't slide out. It had a little bit of grip to it, the way she sliced it kind of down the middle. And every single one of those horses moved dramatically better once she shimmed them and had them go out there moving under saddle, you know, with the pad and with the shims. It was one of the most brilliant demonstrations of saddle fitting that I'd ever seen. And that was just knowledge, you know. That was knowledge. And so try that. you know, if you have a situation. I don't know that it would help to too wide a saddle on, you know, on a horse, because it's going to want to roll. The other danger about a saddle being too wide is the middle part is going to sit down on the backbone, either on the withers or down the spinal process of the horse. And you never want any weight on the withers or the spinal process of the horse. There's no tissue there. It's just bone. You can feel the bone down through that and also air ventilate down the spinal process. But you can damage a horse very dramatically if any part of your saddle or pack saddle or anything like that is sitting right on the bony process of that. So again, that's, you know, saddle fitting can be an entire, you know, series of books or series of videos, but that's kind of my advice in a nutshell is, you know, you may need to look at having, you know, another saddle for your horse and then be very, you know, particular about, you know, try some shims, see if those things will kind of fit. Try the 5-star saddle pad. I cannot recommend that more highly. I really like those pads. And kind of the simpler, the better. It's just like anything with horses. You kind of go out and you try all these crazy things and you come back, you know, to what you started with in the first place. So give those things a try and see if that doesn't give you some help. And if that doesn't, send me an email and I'll refer you to one of the, I'm not going to say the best saddle maker, but somebody who is very, very highly skilled at shaping saddles for horses. And shaping, and not just thinking about the immediate horse you have, but to fit more horses, most of your horses, and also for fitting you. Okay, so I can get you that information as well.
Okay. Well, we thank you for submitting that question, and we look forward to hearing how that goes. So we'll go ahead here, Karen, and move on to another question. This one's from Mary, and it's on forward motion. It says, I'm an avid follower of your seminars, and I've got a problem. He's 4 years old, and his name is Scotty, also known as Snotty. I've never seen a horse more desensitized to pressure. No amount of clucking, kicking, tapping with the whip, leading from the ground, or just plain jumping up and down would make him move forward under saddle. I discovered this shortly after I bought him as a 2-year-old and restarted him from the ground up in the round pen. But getting him to move out is still challenging. A year and a half later, once again, I'm keeping him moving. He's usually off to the races with an impressive bucking display. I will keep him moving at the pace and direction I do choose. He is not motivated by the lunge whip in the least. In fact, you can smack him with it over and over quite hard, and he just won't react. It's kind of scary, actually. He seems to withdraw into himself. He's mentally maturing. His maturity is just beginning to develop a little more. I used to put his attention span at about 15 minutes before he got fed up with whatever we were working on and his snotty self appeared. I'm still working on using rein pressure from the ground to get him to move his hips over. Any other ideas on how to get forward motion into the picture? I know my neighbors enjoy watching me hop up and down and yell and wave the big stick, but I know there's got to be a better way. Help, Mary.
Mary, bring your horse to the Hoosier Horse Fair.
There you go.
I would love to get my hands on this horse because, you know, it goes back to simplicity. Two things, because I look for clues in people's description. Number one, if his name is Scotty, you call him Scotty. Okay? Because if you call a horse by any other name, and this is for everybody. You cannot imagine how many times I hear that. People say, well, you know, this is my horse, but we call her this, you know, or him this. You know, to me, you wouldn't do that to a child, you know, hopefully. So one piece of it is that, because in everything, you know, whether it's horses or people or jobs or anything, attitudes and everything, you know, and you can find little sayings in the Hallmark store about it. So don't project a negative attitude, you know, towards that. That's kind of the first piece of where it's starting to unravel, okay? So just keep that mindful, because when you get effective, he'll be happy to do what it is that you want. So the question is how do we get effective with this? So there's something that you know, one of my teachers, you know, shared with me. We were starting colts. He's he's passed away now, but he said, you know, Karen, if you can do one thing, he said, never lose the curiosity in a young horse. Okay? So, you know, of course, I walked away going, huh? You know, what does that mean? So people tend to, you know, we tend to put horses, you know, we buy this horse and we say, okay, I own you. Now I will use what I consider a four-letter word, which is spelled W-O-R-K. And so that's another word choice that I'm hearing. So when people say, well, my horse, you know, when I work him, you know, he only pays attention for about 15 minutes. I'll tell you what, if I were your horse, I'd pay attention to you for about 2 minutes. And that's the thing we don't really realize. If you think of the best teacher that you had in grade school, they were engaging, they were interesting, they were challenging, they were reinforcing, they were rewarding, hey, good job, you know. So we don't necessarily approach horses that way just because, you know, this is kind of what we're brought up in our environment, to take the horse out and go work my horse. So if you replace that word work with play or interact or engage, I'm going to go dance. You know, when I have a horse come in to a demo, like I'll have horses at the Hoosier Horse Fair. When I have horses there, I call them my dance partners. We're going to dance. You know, so when somebody's going to teach you to dance, and Melinda, you've taught dance for many years, correct?
That's correct. Yeah,
yeah. You've taught people how to dance. Do you say, "Oh, I'm going to go work them now"?
No.
Do you see? And so that those feelings, you know, we think, "Oh, well, that's just inside of me. The horse doesn't pick up on that." And I really beg to differ. I have seen horses that have given people trouble for, you know, years, and had the person talk to them about this. And the person looks at me like, you have got to be out of your mind. What does that have to do with, you know, forward motion? I want a technique that I can work my horse with. Well, all the technique in the world isn't going to create respect and desire in the horse. It's us that changes first. And when that person made that change, even they came along and said, I thought you were crazy, and boy, what a difference, okay? So just trust me on this, and you can think I'm crazy or roll your eyes, whatever, you know, do whatever, but try it. You know, what have you got to lose? You've been dealing with this for a year and a half. So that's the first thing I would make an adjustment in. The next is to keep in mind that when a horse goes in a circle, circles slow a horse down because it doesn't take very long. Some horses more than others, but they go in a circle and a circle and a circle, and they go, wow, I've seen this pose, you know, enough times, even if it is at a blur. And so circles shorten a horse, okay? Straight lines lengthen a horse. So if you've done things in a round pen and said, go, and the horse, basically what you're describing is the horse quit on you. The horse quit. And horses do this all the time. Cattle do this. You know, people who do team roping, they have to get fresh cattle because pretty soon the cattle learn, if I don't go, I don't get roped. And they'll just stand there. They'll open the chute. They can even use a cattle prod or hee-haw, whatever. And that, it doesn't take long for cattle to go, I'm not moving. Now, they don't know what happens after that. If they keep running, they wouldn't go become, you know, McDonald's so fast. But horses do it too. Horses at the racetrack, it's called they'll stop training. They won't train. And I had to understand, you know, somebody said that. They said, you know, I'm having trouble with the racehorse. It won't train. And I had to ask, you know, what is that term? I'm not familiar with that. And they said the horse will not step onto the racetrack. Won't go to the racetrack. Won't go. I mean, that horse just basically quit its job. So if you think of those things, what is a horse's motivation? A horse's motivation is comfort, okay, safety, comfort, and play. So how do you make going forward become the thing that the horse wants to do? So here's a neat little exercise for you to try. And it doesn't take whips and chains and nothing, none of that. All it is find the longest, straightest space that you can. Okay, if it's a field or a long arena, you know, whatever you're comfortable in, go in a straight line, and it's a little game, and you can call it point to point. So you're going to pick 2 points, and don't change the point. Don't make it some other point. You need to have the horse get the idea that if I go to that point, happiness awaits me there. Okay, right now your horse's happiness is stopping, and that happens a lot of times when people use tools like round pens, you know, without this piece of understanding. You know, it's become so common that people will call round penning become a verb. You know, I don't agree with that. You know, round pen is not, it's another tool equal to every other tool. Okay, and it's a valuable tool, but it's not the only tool. So think about point to point. You want that horse to go in a straight line. So here you are, your horseback, you're in the saddle, and you ask the horse to go, and if you're not familiar with my technique of a polite and effective way to ask a horse to go, you know, please watch my video Riding from Above. Okay, I can't tell you everything in the next 5 minutes. But please watch Riding from Above. When the horse goes, take the pressure off. Take the pressure off. You know, so many times what we do is people, you know, the horse starts to go, and then we really give them some pressure. And so the horse goes, well, wait a minute. The more I go, the more pressure I get. Why would I go? Where's my, you know, reinforcement? Where's my reward? Where's my motivation? So go through the steps that I show you. When the horse starts to go, release the pressure so the horse gets reinforced for moving forward. And then go through each step. If the horse stops again, you know, resist the urge to kick the horse to keep them going. That's called pedaling. You don't want to pedal a horse. You want that horse to learn that his happy place is going forward. So these are real common things, and I talk about it in you know, Riding from Above DVD. So when you go and the horse stops, then you just go through those same steps to ask them to go again. The instant they go, release that pressure. So go like this. Even if it's at a walk, go on a straight line. Keep your focus on the spot that you're going to. If your horse drifts left or right, use your leg pressure like you taught on the ground and up on the horse's back. You know, to keep that horse, you know, on that straight line. When you get to that next spot, and don't just focus on that spot. I talk about focus on that spot and the spot behind it. You're going to line it up like the sight on a gun, so that you have true straightness, not imaginary straightness. You can look at one spot and drift all the way over all over the place, but still have your eyes on one spot. So focus with 2 points. It's something Mr. Ray Hunt shared in a clinic with me years and years ago that I have valued and used and share with other people. So there's lots of ingredients to this. Ride to that point. When you get to that point, relax your seat, lift your reins, stop as politely as possible, and let your horse rest there. When your horse is standing there going, really? That deserves a reward? And you go, yes, it did, you know. Then turn around, move the hindquarters, bring the front end through, sit there a minute, focus on your same spot that you came from, be very specific, ride, do the same thing, and ride to the next spot and let that spot be the resting spot. And I'll tell you what, you go through this with consistency, and all of a sudden the horse starts going, hey, well, let's just hurry up and get to that spot. And I'll tell you what, you'll ask them to go, and they'll go, you bet, I know where we're going, I know what's waiting for me over there. And you start tapping into the horse's motivation. I have seen barrel horses completely soured at running barrels. The race horses, I have seen so many horses. My own horse, Brigante, he didn't really want to go anywhere, much of anywhere. And I used this technique in a nice, big, long field. I even had another gal who was very highly knowledgeable and highly experienced. I said, you know, do what I asked you to do. I needed her to ride her horse. And we even used her horse to create that desire that my horse had never been allowed to find. Everything that he had experienced, not everything, certainly, but most of what he'd experienced had been inside an arena. And everything was about whoa, 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 you know, shut him down, shut him down, shut him down, to where he didn't know how to get his leg long again. So I needed to have him, you know, get in the wind. And so I used this same thing with Bergante, you know, when I first got him, to say, hey, you know, let's go. We need to go. And that's where you start finding where whoa equals go. Right now your horse has too much whoa. and you need to find the go. So if you can kind of get that idea and that concept of creating the desire, then you can take that point and change it up. You can take it to another spot. All of a sudden, you know, I would do that for 7 days. You know, do that every day, even use that same spot. And I'll tell you what, it won't take very long. Pretty soon that horse is taking you to that spot. You know, and you let him sit there. And I don't mean sit and let him sit there for, you know, 10 seconds. I mean, you let him sit there until he really lets down and says, you know, hey, I really value this place that you brought me to. You know, we forget to do that. People go on trail rides and the horse, you know, drags the feet going out and then runs home. Well, I go out on a trail ride, and I've talked about this in the other teleseminars. You've probably heard it, Mary. But, you know, I take a horse out, and I find a horse like that, and you can change their mind. I go, hey, let's go out and find that sweet grass in the desert. Now, I'll decide where it is, and I'll create a cue for you to invite you to eat. And when we're done, we're done. You know, I have a cue to stop, too. But pretty soon, that horse is jigging to go out on the trail ride and dragging his feet home. So just think of those things. You know, it's always tapping into the heart and mind of the horse. But if you go back and just examine the attitude with which you present it, and jumping up and down and flailing around and things like that, I just haven't, it's not, you know, I feel like Dr. Phil, how's that working for you? You know, you're already telling me by submitting this really great question that so many people have, you know, it's not, it doesn't work. So you don't need to do that, you know. it'll just become much, much more effective. But, you know, please, if you don't have them already, these answers are in that program on the DVDs. And I'm not just doing some, you know, sale, get the DVDs to make a sale. It's to get you the knowledge that you need to have a different effectiveness in your communication with your horse. So the teleseminars are great, but they're not the core of information in my program. So, you know, I want to help everybody, and I'd love to help everybody for free on teleseminars, but the real answer lies in that base of information. And if you have holes in your program, you know, these are the places that they show up. So this pattern, you know, it's like you said earlier, Melinda, you know, you had Latigo at that time. So, yes, it was partly his character, but look how much you've learned in the years. Look at how many clinics you've ridden in. Look at how many videos you've watched. You know, that's just not, oh, well, you know, Latigo, you know, got better. Your skills got better. So, and Latigo, you know, reflected that. So, you know, don't dismiss that core of information, that core of knowledge, you know, to be able to have more clarity in the communication for your horse. And you'll find, that's why I'd love to have a horse like that in a demo. And you're right, it's a very... I know. Let's find out where Mary lives.
Yeah, I've been trying to think, okay, what's our topic? So I'm really thinking this is one of them. I can see this working at the horse fair. So.
Well, and here's the thing. That behavior right there, that pattern of behavior, because when horses don't want to go, they buck. Bucking is resistance to forward motion. Okay? So it's a very critical behavior to remedy. But I think by this, you know, just even from this little comment and these ideas and concepts, this problem will be gone. I predict that this problem will be resolved before the. You know, I'm sure you can find another one, Melinda. But if you know what to do and you just, you know, keep chipping away at it and, you know, look at things from the horse's point of view and find the thing that's going to create that desire. I've heard of people taking a handful of oats and putting them on barrels, you know, and they go out to run barrels and they'll have their horse stop at the barrel and, you know, eat the oats. You know, and do that, not for one time or two times or, you know, whatever, but, you know, think of it as a, you know, a rehab program. Rehab takes longer than teaching it, you know, effectively from the first place. You know, but it's a process, and you'll chip away at it. I've not seen a horse that doesn't, you know, respond to that. That is considering that there's not something, you know, causing the horse pain. That's another reason the horse won't go forward, is if something is painful in a saddle or, you know, bridle, things like that, or maybe we have a habit of go and we have a habit of pulling on the reins when we ask the horse to go. You know, sometimes that, you know, that's a conflicting, you know, cue to the horse as well. But that, again, that's all covered in the DVD. It'll really help you And if it doesn't, if you watch the DVD, you can go, yeah, I know all this stuff, and I got it, or you have the DVDs already, this is adding to it, you know, send them back. I tell people that. I try to on every teleseminar and on my website. If something I have or sell does not work for you, send it back to me. It's a no-risk, you know, kind of a thing, because everybody's bought things that we regret. I do the same thing. I'm really hesitant to buy things over the Internet, you know, because I've been disappointed. But that's why I put that unconditional warranty on everything that I sell. We got to pack. I have to tell this funny story very quickly since we're running out of time anyway. But we had a refund the other day come in, and it was a package of DVDs. It was the entire set of DVDs, and the person wanted to return it, and their horse, they didn't have their horse anymore, and they said, "Can we return it?" We said, "You know what? Yeah, you can return it." Well, they came back to us, they were still wrapped. They still had the cellophane on them. They had never been opened. And I don't know what happened with the person, or, you know, why they don't have a horse anymore, but you know, I said to my husband, I said, well, maybe if they'd been unwrapped and looked at, maybe they'd still have their horse. I don't know.
You think?
You know, like use it, you know. I mean, what have you got to lose? Turn it in and hit the play button, you know, see what happens. That point-to-point exercise is very, very effective. Get out of the round pen. Get out of the small arena. Give that horse a place to go. Here's another idea. Get a ball. Go down and get just an inexpensive ball down at, you know, a store somewhere that has fabric over it, and just have the horse follow a ball. Give him something to do. Play polo cross. You can see polo cross, you know, on my website. That's a lot of what I do at, you know, towards the end of clinics, is we start doing something, and all of a sudden the horse isn't thinking about, well, I don't want to go. You know, I want to go. I want to go see what this is. You know, make it something fun. So, but
Karen,
look, you know, just examine and change the attitude first, because none of this will work without that. Okay.
Okay. Well, Karen, we are actually out of time, so tonight's really fun to buy. So, we appreciate everybody submitting their questions. And if you haven't been online, Karen's got some holiday specials going on right now. You can do some last-minute shopping. Get your husband to do that last-minute shopping and get that stuff out. Like I said, Karen's going to be at the Hoosier Horse Fair April 13th through the 15th of 2012. We're excited about that. Looks like we're going to try to put a clinic together sometime after that. Plans are kind of coming together for that. Karen, do you have anything you want to add to anything upcoming?
I do want to emphasize the holiday specials. You know, there are so many different specials. There's equipment, there's DVDs, there's a special on the red light therapy. This every Christmas, and I know people wait for these specials, but, you know, these are the lowest prices of the year for these things. You can still get them in time for Christmas. So I think through Wednesday, I think Tuesday or Wednesday. So, you know, get online and you know, take advantage of those specials. We do have a clinic coming up in Rio Verde that we've put on. We're starting to book clinics for 2012. My break this last year is officially over. So I'll be back out, but I will not be doing the crazy, insane schedule, you know, 32 clinics and 12 expos in a year. You know, that's a thing of the past. This, you know, time with my family and my health and, you know, my time, it's been very, very valuable. So I'm finding balance in my life. I guess that's what turning 50 does. But, but I'll be going out and going to clinics in the area. Something to mention that people don't always know. If you want to have a clinic in your area that, you know, I'm not coming to your area. I've had people, this one we're doing in February, the folks said, you know, I've been wanting to come to a clinic for 2 years and didn't realize that I could have you come here. So, you know, if you get a group of people together and, you know of a facility that's available on a weekend, you know, or a three-day weekend, I'm flying out. So I'm not going to be hauling the horses and the trailer and the dog and everything like I had been. So I have a lot more flexibility in my locations of, you know, where I can go to, since I'll just be flying out and back. And I'm only going to be doing a couple clinics a month. You know, one or two clinics a month, again, just keep that balance. And, that's that's what I'm looking forward to this year. I'm really excited about this upcoming year. I'm going to have a balance of what I enjoy doing, helping people hands-on with their horses, focusing on projects, and you know, having a life with my family and husband as well. So that's what's coming up.
Okay. Exciting 2012, and can you believe
yeah.
it's almost already here? So time flies, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Okay. Well, Karen, we appreciate you joining us tonight and taking time out, and we also appreciate everybody submitting their questions. We haven't got to your question. We'll try to get to that as soon as we can. Keep them coming. And we wish everybody a Merry Christmas, and we will talk to you in 2012. Isn't that crazy?
I know. Well, everybody have a wonderful Christmas, and enjoy time with your horses and your families, and we'll do this again in 2012.
Okay. Good night, everybody. Thanks.
Thank you, Melinda. Good night.